Akiva, The Story of Rabbi Akiva and His Times, by Marcus Lehman. Read to you by Daniel Freitag. Chapter 1. Jerusalem was destroyed, and the Holy Temple was burned to ashes. Judea lay in a state of desolation and misery. The earth was covered with the blood of the slain. Thousands of the finest people had been sold as slaves, or sent to fight against wild beasts in the arena, providing the bloodthirsty Romans with gruesome spectacles for their entertainment. It seems as though Judea's very soul might soon expire. At the same time, however, the seed that was to bring future recovery and eternal sustenance had already been planted, and although it was hardly noticeable, it was destined to grow strong roots and to flourish. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great teacher of Israel, had foreseen the destruction of the holy city. He had warned his fellow Jews and pleaded with them to seek peace with the Romans and to subjugate themselves to their rule, but to no avail. The city's zealous fighting men insisted that they would rather suffer defeat and even death than bear the yoke of oppression under the Romans. Then Rabbi Yochanan arranged for a rumor to be spread that he had died. His disciples, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania, placed him on a funeral bier and carried it to the city gates at nighttime. "We would like to bury this dead body outside the city," they told the guards, who let them pass without any questioning. Rabbi Yochanan went straight to the Roman encampment and asked to see the commanding general Vespasian. "Hail to you, Roman emperor," the sage called out to him. Vespasian replied, "If the emperor hears that, he will kill both of us." "And nevertheless, I say that Vespasian is now the Roman emperor," Rabbi Yochanan stated. "In only a short while, you will conquer Jerusalem and the Holy Temple, both of which can come to pass only if the Almighty wills it, as the prophet Yeshayahu has foretold." And lo and behold, as the two were speaking, horsemen came riding up at great speed and called out, "Hail to our emperor Vespasian! The old emperor is dead, and our people and the Senate have chosen the glorious general Vespasian to become our new emperor." Now the new emperor was quite charmed by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he told him that he would grant him whatever he wished. Rabbi Yochanan asked for permission to build a base medrash in Yavne, so that he could teach and study Torah in peace. The emperor granted him his modest request, and amidst all the travails of war, Rabbi Yochanan moved to Yavne with his disciples to initiate his new undertaking. And there he sat, like the high priest Eli once had, anxiously waiting to see what would happen to the Holy Temple. When he and his disciples heard the tragic news that Jerusalem had fallen and the temple had been destroyed, they tore their clothing in grief and sat on the ground and wept. They sat mourning and lamenting for a long time, until Rabbi Yochanan gathered his strength and began to console the others. "It is our task," he told them, "to ensure the future of Israel. Although it seems that we have lost everything, our most precious gem still remains with us, our holy Torah. The Torah is the source of our life and our guarantee for better times to come. Let us not be overcome by pain and sorrow. Let us draw strength from our Torah. We must continue to live our lives and pass on to our children the inheritance of our fathers." And so, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his followers quietly devoted themselves to the worship of God and the study of Torah, thereby creating a fortress for themselves and for their people, so that the scattered and persecuted flock would find refuge and shelter there from the pursuing wolves. Although Jerusalem and the temple were destroyed, the curse that was cast upon the land, that the earth no longer give forth its fruit, and that long stretches of land lie desolate and barren, had not yet taken effect. "There is a magnificent landscape at the Lake of Kinneret," wrote Josephus. "The rich soil is planted with various kinds of fruit trees, and the mild climate accommodates all of them beautifully. Walnuts, which take well to cool air, grow here in boundless amounts. So do date plants, which require heat, and figs and olives, which thrive in a milder climate. One is tempted to call it a competition within nature. So wondrous is it that such a diversity can coexist in one and the same setting. Not only does the soil nurture all these different fruits so miraculously, but it also maintains them for a long time. Grapes and figs ripen for 10 months continuously, whereas the other fruits take turns throughout the year. It was in this fertile area that a wealthy man by the name of Kalba Savua lived. His splendid mansion was surrounded by vineyards, olive trees, date palms, and many fields. He also owned large flocks of sheep, which his shepherds took all the way down to the meadows along the banks of the Jordan River for grazing. Kaul B'Savuah had also owned a house in Jerusalem, and during Vespasian's siege of the city, he had been one of the three men who supplied the whole city with provisions for years. But then the zealots had burned down the storehouses in order to provoke the people to wage war against the Romans. Kaul B'Savuah was deep in mourning over the tragic fate of the holy city. He had been forced to pay the Romans a large sum of money in order to avoid being outlawed, and then he withdrew to his country home. There he was occupied with running the estate and supervising the cultivation of his fields, orchards, and vineyards. His wife had passed away, and he had only one daughter, Rachel, who was to inherit all his wealth. Like Rachel Imenu, she was beautiful in her appearance, but even more beautiful and striking was her keen mind, and more precious than all her father's wealth was the good heart she possessed. It was at this time that Kaul B'Savuah was looking for a supervisor to oversee the shepherds and take charge of his herds and flocks, as well as other affairs of the estate. It was impossible for him to do all this himself, and as he had no son of his own to stand at his side and assist him, he was forced to look for a stranger. And it was this stranger whom he would entrust with, among everything else, the task of dealing with the disloyalty of his servants, which had been troubling him lately. Several candidates had been suggested to him, but none of them seemed trustworthy enough. Then one day a young man showed up at the door with a recommendation from Kaul B'Savuah's neighbor, Hyrcanus. Kaul B'Savuah invited him in, and after reading the recommendation, he addressed the young man who stood humbly before him. "My neighbor praises you for being loyal, hardworking, and honest. Also appealing to me is your apparent physical strength, which suggests that you have the power and ability to work efficiently. What is your name?" "My name is Akiva. My father's name was Yosef, and my grandfather's was Yehoshua. We are descendants of a noble heathen family. Sisera, who was the general of King Yavin of Chatzor, and was killed by Yael, was our ancestor. My grandfather came to Jerusalem with Queen Helena, and the family converted to Judaism. My parents lost all their possessions, and at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, they were killed. Therefore, I must earn my livelihood by offering my services to others."
"And what compensation do you ask for your work?"
At that moment, Rachel entered the room, and when Akiva saw her, he thought to himself, "Oh, if only I could answer as our forefather Yaakov once did. I will work for you for 7 years for your daughter Rachel." Rachel wondered who the stranger was, but did not ask. She turned to her father. "I wanted to let you know, father, that Papas Ben Yehuda, the guest you were expecting, has arrived.
Please show him to his room, my daughter, and see to it that he gets everything he needs for his comfort. Also, tell the servants to prepare a sumptuous meal for him. Please give him my warm regards and my apologies that I cannot receive him right now. I will come to his room later to welcome him."
Rachel nodded and left the room.
"Papas is the son of my childhood friend," Kaul B'Savuah explained to his visitor. "I have him in mind for my daughter, assuming, of course, that the young people take a liking to each other. And now, Akiva, tell me under what conditions you would be willing to work for me."
"Why should I demand conditions from you, my master? I will ask you to pay me according to the value of my labor. I am certain that you will not underpay me."
"I like you," Kaul B'Savuah replied, "and I am appointing you as supervisor over all my shepherds. You will see to it that they choose the right meadows for grazing, and that they do not steal or misappropriate anything. You will also see to it that the shearing of the sheep takes place at the most opportune time, and that the wool is promptly delivered to my storage house. You will also be in charge of selling those animals that are fit for sale and putting aside other animals for household consumption. Are you familiar with the halacha in these matters?"
"No, my master. All I know about Judaism is what I have heard from others concerning the history of our nation. I was never encouraged to learn, and why should I become involved with it? All those great sages together were not able to save the holy city from destruction."
"Do not speak like that. The sages were not responsible for the fate of the holy city. I see that you are not learned. If you were, I would have put you in charge of the slaughtering work as well. But right now, that's out of the question. Follow me. I will introduce you to my servants."